Last time we discussed expressing affection, expressing love, statements that a wife has to hear, and this time we're going to discuss criticism. Okay. So, our rule when it comes to criticism is very simple. Don't. There, now you have it. So you'll tell me, but it's really important, I really have to. She doesn't realize that if she reads her credit card information into the phone on the bus, anyone there could be copying down their credit card information. She doesn't realize that she can't just click on links in her email and then she could end up, wiping us out financially because of the identity theft. So find another way to say it. Find another angle. It doesn't have to be as criticism. Meaning it doesn't have to be on the moment. You're sitting there on the bus and she just read the credit card information out loud. It's not going to happen for the next day or two, right? Find another way to express it. What's done is done. What usually happens is we react right away. You see, she did something like that and you're like, I can't believe you did that. Don't you realize that? You know what could happen? And I heard a story that. And now it's all personal because you got her on the moment. You told her where she's wrong. That's not beneficial. It's very hard for any of us to accept criticism when we're being told we're wrong. So if you really want to do it right, you don't react on the moment. You think about it. And then you think, how could I approach this positively? How could I, come to her and mention it, not connect it to something that happened there, mention it as its own point. You walk in one day and you say, it was very weird. I was on the bus. And there was a woman reading her credit card information, or there was a man reading his credit card information out loud, and I could see the guy behind him jotting it down as he's saying it. And it blew me away. Here he is giving his credit card information, and this other guy's taking it down, and by the time he gets home, who knows how much he's going to be charged? So I followed him off the bus, and I stopped him, and I said, hey, buddy, you better know someone took down your credit card information, even though it meant I'd get home 5 minutes later, but okay. So, Meshanin Mipnei Shalom. The Gemara says you're allowed to say things a little differently to attain peace at home. You can find another way to tell her that. You can find an article online and share it with her. But most of the time, change takes a lot of time. It's very hard for people to change. And we'll discuss that in a minute. But we also have to realize that the way women hear things is different than the way men hear things. So, when we were in high school, yes.
Can you fabricate a story?
Yeah. It's not a good idea. Meaning I would not fabricate a story unless it's really, really important. Meaning in most circumstances, people get used to lying, and once you start, you never end. So it's better to tell yourself, I can't, and figure out another solution. Because once you open that door, it's very hard to close it. And then it just gets opening wider and wider and wider, and then it's destructive to a marriage. So it's much better not to. It's much better to be able to say, I heard a story of a guy or something along those lines. Or find another way. Because fabricating a story is really not a good idea. Usually it backfires in the long run. So we had a principal in high school who had a hearing aid. And the guys... one of the jokes they like to play on him, I never did this, but they'd stand next to him and have conversations with one another, moving their lips as though they were talking. And they're moving their lips and he's not hearing, so he keeps upping his hearing aid. And then his hearing aid was on top volume, and then one of them would yell back to the other and he would go like, So this was a cruel game that the high school guys used to play with him. But it stayed with me, There are things in life that you see that you're like, you're not going to forget. So you have to realize when you're talking to your wife, you have to imagine that principle with the hearing aid on highest volume. You whisper and she hears it like a yell. Women are far more sensitive than men. And you'll be standing, I'll tell you a true story. I was in a clothing store and a woman asks her husband, is this skirt too tight on me? And he says, maybe a little. And she turns and starts yelling at him and says, I can't believe you said that here in public. Don't you have any self-respect? How do you shame your wife like that? How do you stand there in front of all these people and tell me I'm the fattest woman in the store? Don't you think you should have a little bit of decency? What's wrong with you? I can't believe you did that. You shame me like that in front of everyone, and I'm standing there like I'm containing myself from bursting out laughing, you know. What did he say? She asked him, is it tight? He said, maybe a little. And what she heard was, hearing aid top volume, yeah, you're only a little fat, right? It's a little tight, you're a little fat. I'm fat? How could you say that to me? You said, I'm the fattest woman in the store. But that's not what I said. But that's what she heard. Her hearing aid is on top volume. You're talking, she's hearing much more than you're saying.
So what should she have said? Like, if your wife is buying a dress, if you don't want her to buy a dress, you want your wife to look
That's
pretty,
a separate
right?
class. I can't go on so many tangents in one night. You'll learn. Uri, first, learn the principles, then you'll use your own seichel. You'll see, after a few explosions, you'll learn. Maybe it's better to say, gee, I'm not sure, maybe it's just on the border, but maybe it's not a good idea to get something that's so borderline. You know, it's weird. They make clothing so tight these days. Wow. You know, you lost so much weight and it's still tight. You'll learn. I don't have to teach you everything. You know, the direction you got. More than that, you'll figure out on your own. So at any rate, she, whatever you're saying, we said last class, she's gauging as a question of, does he love me? That's number one. Number two, she's hearing it on much higher volume. Number three, somehow us men have this weakness where we think that if something's logical, then it's not personal. But we don't behave that way either. Meaning, if someone comes to you and says, you know, you should really learn how to parallel park. Take it personally. I know how to parallel park perfectly. You know, that was a little complicated spot, that's all. I wasn't so focused. But he didn't tell you anything personal. He just told you, you know, it took you 5 minutes to parallel park over there, so maybe you should take a class or two again. But it's personal. Maybe you should think of taking a few more courses so you could get a job that makes more money. It wasn't personal, but a man is sure going to take it personal. But somehow when we speak to women, we think that if what we said is logical, then there's no reason they should take it personally. And the exact opposite is true. We ourselves take things personally, but they take it even more personally. So husband's going to come and tell his wife at the smallest piece of criticism, and then he's going to say, but I'm right. That has nothing to do with it. That doesn't mean that you didn't hurt her feelings. You could be right from today until tomorrow, but at the end of the day, it hurts to hear it. And the fourth point is that there's always that feeling that it was more important for you to say that criticism than not to hurt my feelings. If my feelings were more important than the criticism, then you wouldn't have said it. So then again, the man comes back and says, but logically, I'm right. Don't tell your wife. That has nothing to do with it. So you could be right. So again, we try to avoid criticism. If it's something that has to be said, we try to find a different angle of getting the point across without criticism. We have to realize that whatever we're going to say is going to be amplified 10 times, 100 times. And we have to realize that even if we are correct logically and there's reasonable backing for what we've said, it is still going to be taken personally. And also, there's always that intrinsic feeling of, it was more important for you to criticize me than to avoid hurting my feelings. So that's hakdama, intro. And realize that criticism takes a toll. And if the glue of marriage is appreciation, the destruction of marriage is criticism. So it doesn't matter how correct you are, you have to gauge the criticism with that question in mind. Is my marriage worth that blow? Because I'm hitting a blow to my marriage, and it doesn't matter how right I am. Criticism throws a blow at the marriage. It hits a blow at the relationship. And sometimes you'll say, I have no choice. You know, she's driving without seatbelting the kids. I know of a couple where the wife feels the husband's license should be suspended. He doesn't see well. He's driving and he's endangering people's lives. So she might have to take that step, but you have to realize that criticism is endangering the marriage. Sometimes you go through a third party. Sometimes it is important to get a third party involved. But that's the introduction to the idea of criticism. And again, don't think to yourself it's a small thing. It's not a small thing. We also have to remember that we all have difficulty making changes. Think about slichos now. You have to wake up a few minutes earlier every day. Know how many people make it. And if you make it, how groggy are you all day? And if you make it, how antsy are you and how upset are you? So at the end of the day, change is very difficult for everyone. And when you're criticizing someone, aside from all the hurt that's involved, at the end of the day, we're going to find ourselves facing that fault again and again because people don't change easily. So then we have to ask ourselves, why am I criticizing? And the answer is almost always because I feel like it, because I'm bothered by it. Not because objectively things have to be different, and it has nothing to do with whether logic is on my side. The real reason I'm criticizing is because it ticks me off. And that's not a legitimate reason. So then I have to think how to work things out. I don't have to hurt the other person's feelings. But I'm in the right. Okay, I'm not saying things shouldn't change. I'm just saying find a positive venue of attaining that change. Sometimes it's enough to complement the positive. You find a way of complementing the positive. We all are attracted to things that will get us compliments. We all move in the direction where we think we will be complimented and appreciated by other people. And if it's the person that's most dear to us, then we're drawn to that. Sometimes what happens in a relationship is that spouses spend much of their time criticizing one another. And what happens then is that instead of being the source of the other person's confidence, well-being, serenity, we become the source of the other person's agitation. And then what happens is the person slowly pulls out of the relationship because they're not getting what they want out of the relationship. They're getting the exact opposite. There's another problem with criticism. Most often, the other side will recognize relatively quickly that we're right, assuming we're right, assuming we are right. And then the other side has to face the reality that it's hard to change. And then they have to face the fact that they have a fault, they're not succeeding in changing, and their spouse doesn't like it. And the question is, where do you go from there? So you think the place to go from there is change the reality. Change whatever has to be changed. But that's not easy. And when a person fails at that, the next one that's really the problem is the spouse. It's not, you understand what happens? I have a spouse who I love, and if a person has a spouse that they love, and that spouse is important to them, and the spouse wants them to change something, but they don't succeed in changing it, so then what they want is the spouse to change. Don't expect that of me. Accept me as is. You won't accept me as is, so you don't love me as much as I thought you do. Now, this is a place where parents very often make this mistake. Parents will very often give the child the feeling that they have expectations, you should do better in school. And then the child does not succeed in school. You should be more respectful, and then he doesn't, he's not more respectful. And then the child starts feeling like, okay, I'm not living up to their expectations, do they still love me? And parents sometimes are very pressured that the child should succeed, and instead of giving him that confidence, we love you and this isn't that important, they do the exact opposite. They come back and they start saying, this is so important, you better do this, you've got to get your act together. Maybe, and maybe not. Maybe what he needs now is the love. And what a spouse needs is the love. And the love gives us the strength to face the challenge again. Yeah?
I mean, when someone gives me criticism, immediately I think, okay, where is it coming? Once I was talking to my mom, she said some stuff, and a little bit of criticism. After she left, I smiled to myself because I knew it was coming from a place of love. I mean, I told her on the phone, when their phone bill was, she's like, how could you do that? You're talking to people, you're talking to this person, you're talking to that person. And I'm smiling because it's only because, she loves me that she says these things, whereas other people, can say simple stuff hey, what are you doing with your life? And I know where it's coming from. I'm like, no, absolutely not. Don't you dare. Don't you start.
Oh, so that's the point we were discussing earlier. That when someone criticizes us, what they're saying in a nutshell is, you are wrong. And when someone tells us, you are wrong, our initial reaction is, no, I'm not. And as much as you prove to me, I don't want to say, yes, I am. I want to say, no, I'm not. I remember, it must have been 6th or 7th grade, we had a substitute teacher who said whoever finished the work could play chess on the side, but don't make noise. It's okay, I played chess, and what do you know? I made noise. I didn't think I made noise. I thought everyone else made noise. I didn't think I was making noise, but he decided I made noise. In all honesty, I have no idea. Maybe I didn't, maybe I didn't. But he warned me one more time, and I'm kicking you out of class. So we're playing, and he says, Frankenthal, I told you not to make noise. So what's my initial reaction? No, I didn't. I don't remember if I did or didn't. But he said, you're making noise. I said, no, I didn't. He said, you're going to lie to me? Get out and tell the principal I kicked you out of class. What he didn't know was that he was the one being checked out by the school. And I had a good report card. I was a top student. So when the principal saw me out there, the principal thought badly about him, not about me. But that didn't matter. Like, I was standing there all nervous, like shaking in my pants. And every time I wanted to go to the principal, because he told me to go to the principal said, I don't have time to talk to you now. Later on, I overheard the principal talking, and I understood what had happened. But all the time, so I went back, and I asked the teacher if I could have permission to come back in. So he said, no. I said, why not? He said, because you lied. I said, wait, I agree with you, I made noise. But my initial reaction when you told me I made noise was, no, I didn't. But you're right, I did. And till today, I remember, you know, it dawned on me then, that understanding that when someone tells you you did something wrong, your initial reaction is, no, I didn't. This goes back to 6th or 7th grade. But, a second later, I was ready to concede I did. But very often, we don't even hit that second later. Meaning, we stay at that place of, no, I didn't. And if you're putting your spouse in that place, where are we going to go from here? And that's why when you use the term constructive criticism, to my mind, it's an oxymoron. So rare that you have an opportunity to really give constructive criticism. Give constructive affection. Give constructive compliments. If you want your wife to be more careful seatbelting the kids, find the way to express positively how careful she is with the kids, how positive she is with the kids, how much you're happy trusting her with the kids, and find ways of building that direction. Now, sometimes you don't have a choice. After everything we said, there's something you have to bring up. So the answer to that is, don't. Back to the beginning of class. But then there are going to be times when you're going to say, no. We're going to have to address this. So then there are a few rules that you have to adhere to, and this is not only in marriage, this is in all interpersonal relations. Rule number one, don't. Find another way. Don't be so quick to go down this course. Rule number two. See you on. Oh, thank you. Don't. Even though you think you've exhausted all options, stop. Tell yourself, I don't have the option of criticizing. Is there another route I can go? Okay. After we've exhausted rule number one and rule number two. Rule number three. Don't react when the thing happened itself. Then it's very personal. The person, let's say you're finding that your spouse is dishonest with you. You call up the spouse. Did you pick up the kids from gone? Yeah, sure, I did. And what the spouse meant to say is, I will. But you know that a fire just broke out next to their kindergarten. You didn't have time to go into all that. You just called and asked, did you pick up the kid? And she says, yeah, and you heard on the news, there's a fire there, so you're ready to dash over there. But if she tells you she picked up the kids, you say, okay, great, so I'll see you in a few minutes. Now you find out, an hour later, she said yes, she meant I will. And there can be stories that happen time and again where you realize, hey, this is something we're going to have to deal with. This can't happen. It's not going to work. Did you fill the gas last night? Yeah, sure, I filled the cars filled. She meant, I'm going to go to the store, and on my way, I'll fill up the gas. You get up the next morning, she didn't end up going to the store. You get up, and now you're going to be late to work. and your head is on the cutting board with your boss. This isn't the first time. Little things, but sometimes they could have a big impact. And guys, in every marriage, any woman you marry, there will be big issues. There's no such thing as a marriage where there are no issues. Every marriage has a few big issues that each spouse has to work out with the other. There's no other way. You try to date and find out and get the girl where you'll have the most concentric circles as far as your aspirations in life and your values and your preferences. But at the end of the day, every person has real issues to deal with. So we said, rule number one, don't. Rule number two, don't. Rule number three, don't. If you see you have to address it, don't address it when you had something that just happened. It should be something discussed at a different occasion, at a time where it's not as personal. Next point. Find a time when you're close. Usually we criticize when there's an explosion. And not only that, but you overcharge the credit card, and you don't drive safely, and you never talk respectfully to my parents, and you told me you picked up the kids from Ghana. I don't understand. Why'd you lie to me? We give a whole slew of attacks. Bada boom, bam, beep. Oh, boy. Okay, what'd you get? You let out your steam, but you got nothing. Nothing conducive is going to come out of that. Nothing positive is going to come out of that. So you want to build, you want to create, you find the time when you're close, you find the time when things are pleasant, you find the time when other people aren't listening. Doesn't have to be it may not be in front of the kids, it may not be in front of your in-laws or your parents or guests. If you really are interested in constructing and building, then it has to be personal. We're sitting together and we're talking. When you mention it, you have to have given a lot of thought before you mention it, and that thought has to include a few things. Picking the right time and the right setting, and how to present it. You cannot come to the conversation with a slew of examples. You know, this week you lied about the kindergarten. The week before that, you told me you filled gas and you didn't. The week before that, you told me you didn't overcharge the credit card, but you did. You're going to give a whole slew of examples. She's going to say, you're right. You proved it. I'm a liar. You married a liar. Tough luck. If you're going to prove it, you're not going to get anywhere. If you choose one example, and you discuss that example, and you say, look, this is what happened, and I'm uncomfortable with it, and I wanted to think with you how we can move forward from here, how we could ensure it doesn't happen again, you might find you have someone to talk to. So you choose one example, and you have to come prepared with real solutions. You have to do your research. Very often, all we do is throw the problem at the other person and say, this is a problem. This cannot continue. Oh, great, okay, but you didn't give solutions. So what'd you do again? You let off your steam, but you didn't help the other person resolve it. And you have to come with multiple solutions, having thought through what directions could we take. Next point. If you've reached this far and you're still in peace and you're making headway, so you have to take something upon yourself that is equally difficult and equally meaningful to your partner that you will work on at the same time she's working on something. Don't just come with expectations. It's very easy to sit on the sidelines and say, you know, I want you to be more careful about A or B or C. What about you? You're perfect. You're great, right? No. A person should walk into the conversation with the acknowledgement, I know I have a lot to work on, and I want us to think together if we could each take something we're going to work on now. The new year is coming, or I feel we've reached a point of serenity in our marriage where it's a really good time to move forward, and I wanted to think with you, and it might even be a good starting point to hear from her. Before you mentioned to her what you'd like her to work on, to hear from her, what would she like you to work on? You might be very surprised that you don't feel you have a right to say anything. She's going to come to you and say, you know, okay, I'll tell you. I feel like you lose your temper, and I feel like the kids are really suffering. And I feel like sometimes you're letting yourself say things in front of them that are so harmful. I'm sometimes scared to tell you what really happened because of the way you lose your temper. Oh, suddenly you have an insight as to why she's not telling the full truth. Okay, I would suggest starting the conversation that way. Starting the conversation with listening. You want her to hear what you have to say, so why don't you begin by hearing what she has to say? And come with a notepad. You might find she has a lot to say. She didn't hear this class. She's going to suddenly give you a lot of examples of A or B or C. But if you're prepared, if you think this is so important, so then you have to be prepared to listen. And finally, being that we're both going to work on something simultaneously, we have to give a lot of leeway. Things take time, and a lot of positive feedback. Meaning when there's a small advancement, we have to show tremendous appreciation for it. What usually happens is we walk into the conversation thinking, I'm right, and she is dead wrong, and I don't know where she grew up, but there's no way anyone in the world would think that she should get away with this type of behavior. Not going to get anywhere with that attitude. Doesn't matter how convinced you are that you're right. The attitude has to be, this is who I am, this is who she is. If I'm asking her to change, it's going to be difficult. If it's going to be difficult, I have to be there supportive so that when she makes the slightest advancement, I show tremendous appreciation, and that will give her the strength to continue advancing. Yes?
Don't use it as an opportunity to just blow off the steam, even if you're right, you're convinced them that they're wrong, whatever. It's not going to get you anywhere, I get that. But then if you do have all this steam that needs to be blown off, what do you do with it?
You know what my answer is when people...
Steam and emotional steam and physical, you
know. When people ask me, why are you upset? I have an answer that really gets on their nerves, but it's the truth. I say I'm upset because I haven't yet perfected myself. It's because of me, not because of them. It's very rare that there's a legitimate reason to be upset. The real reason we're upset is because we are out of equilibrium. We have to be better people. The fact that the other person has what to work on, that doesn't necessarily legitimize being upset. So, okay, they wronged me. So, okay. And I'm perfect? I'm not. Why am I upset? Because I'm not perfect. I'm not upset because of what they did. I might be hurt by what they did. But if I'm upset, so I have to work on myself. So I have to realize why I'm getting upset and how I could resolve it. I think that during the course of the year, we will cover many points which will address that question. Meaning I don't think it's one point. I think there are many reasons why people get upset. A lot of it stems from misunderstanding. Not understanding where the other person's coming from. And a lot of it stems from unfair expectations. Meaning, what generally happens in marriage is you walk into marriage expecting one thing, and during the course of the first few years, you discover that's not what's happening here. And then you're faced with a question. The natural result is to be frustrated with marriage, upset at your spouse, to feel cheated, to feel disenchanted. That's the natural response as you progress within a marriage and realize this isn't what I was expecting. This isn't the person I thought I was marrying. The correct response is to come to terms with it and say, okay, this isn't what I was thinking, but let me see what's good about the other person. Let me see the good in the other person. Let me have appreciation for who the other person is, and let me build with that. Let me work with what's here. Every marriage requires work, and every marriage will reach that point of disenchantment. This is not what I thought I was getting into. Fine, but any marriage reaches that point. Now you have to build from there. That's when you start really building. You start realizing, okay, my spouse has this fault or that weakness that I was unaware of, where do I go from here? And that's usually, to my mind, that's where most anger comes from. It's from there it develops. So she makes jokes at my expense. So she gives away my secrets. So she She overcharges the credit card. She can't get along with any boss and she loses every job she has. She's an irresponsible parent. She leaves the frying pan out where the kids can knock it down on their head. You can have a series of serious examples. And the answer is, okay, now let's work with it. This is who she is right now. Some things we can talk about, some things we can circumvent, and some things we have to learn to live with. Fine. Let's see. But the frustration should not lead to anger. The frustration should lead to thought and development. It requires thought. It's not easy. But if you think about it, then you learn to develop together. You'd like to think that marriage is natural, it's easy, it flows, you just smile, you love one another, every day is better than than the preceding one. You'd like to think marriage is that way. It doesn't happen that way naturally. Naturally, two different people have different weaknesses, and it requires work. When you work, so you'll learn habits which develop into a system which is the way we described, where it gets better and better. But it doesn't naturally flow that way. Naturally, I'm very at peace with myself. You want me to be at peace with her? But don't you see, she has all these faults. How could I ever be at peace with her? That takes work. But if you're willing to work on it, then you reach a point where things become beautiful. But it requires work. It requires a decade or two. It doesn't happen overnight. You have to build something. Build the understanding. Build the appreciation. Build the attitudes. And then over time, it becomes more and more beautiful. But the beginning stage is, this isn't what I thought it was. When we were dating, it was so much fun. It was so natural. Things just flowed. I loved having conversations with her. Then she wasn't doing what she's doing now. I didn't dream she could do what she's doing now. Fine, now what? Everyone reaches that point. The question is, where do you go from there? And that's where most people start bottling up or criticizing. And that's why many marriages go down the tubes. To quote Rav Simcha Cohen, one of the most famous marriage consultants in Israel, he said they did research asking couples who were married for a number of years how many of them would marry the same person if they had the choice all over again. And I think he said 60 or 65% said they wouldn't, and 35 or 40% said they would. And he said, I agree with you. I'm also shocked that you could get 35% who would. I don't get that. 35% would really marry that person all over again? Nah. That's Rav Simcha Cohen's line. He says, what do you mean? Now you see all the faults. What would you marry him again for? You got stuck with him, I understand, but wait, you're going to marry him all over again? That's if you stay at that point. If you stay at disenchantment, which many people do, so then you're right. So then why would I ever marry him again? But if you're willing to work forward, so then you could build something very, very beautiful. More beautiful than what you imagined earlier. Different, but more beautiful. Yes?
One rabbi married his wife for a really long time. So I love my wife even more than when we were legally married. Because of all that, all the trials and hardships we went through together solidified the relationship. We went through a lot together. We've been through a lot together. We've seen a lot together. We've worked through a lot together. And that, those experiences, at least that's the vibe I got from him, that it sort of solidified it in the end and made me pass it, if you get past it.
Yeah, we'll discuss that. Every issue is the source of great connection. What seems to be a big issue now can be a source of great connection later. But what that rabbi said, I'm sorry, every rabbi I know says that. My teacher said it even more sharply. The feelings you have in the beginning are nothing. They're not love. You don't know love till you're married much longer. Love is what comes later. Everything beforehand is a joke. You think you love the other person. You have no clue what love is. Till you're married many more years, you don't. That's what I was taught. Yeah.